Welcome to episode 263 of Sports Geek. On this week's CEO series episode, I chat with TV host, podcaster, and Croc Media CEO, Craig Hutchison.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host who is working with sports teams around the world, Sean Callinan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callinan, and you can find me working with sports teams around the world with Sports Geek, and you can find me in all places on the internet. You can try the old-fashioned way via email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, at Sean Callinan on most social media platforms, or at Sports Geek on most platforms, or at sportsgeekhq.com is where you can find this podcast, the newsletter, the Q&A episodes, and everything else related to Sports Geek. Welcome back for another year of Sports Geek podcasting. This is year 7, 2020, started humbly started in 2013, and now we are in the year 2020. So really happy to be back, looking forward to bigger and better episodes, more guests, more listeners. If you're a new time listener, thank you very much. Welcome. If you're a long time listener, you've been here for 260 odd episodes. Well, they're not odd episodes. I don't think they're odd episodes. If you've been there for the whole journey, thank you very much. About to get in this chat that I had with Craig Hutchison before the Christmas New Year break to kick off this. But before I do, I just want to talk about the Patreon campaign. You can support our podcasting and sports business content efforts via Patreon. So if you enjoy the podcast, if you find yourself nodding every now and again when I'm having an interview with one of my guests, you can support by going to sportsgeekhq.com/Patreon. It helps pay for the costs of this podcast, both James, podcast editor, Jolly, producer, and the like. And it gives an opportunity also for sponsors that want to reach the Sports Geek audience. I'm really pleased when I hear from guests and they tell me that, of listeners that have reached out from different parts of the world, working for big sporting teams and brands that are listening. If you want to reach those people, you can do so as a supporter of the podcast. So you can do that at a personal level for as little as $4 a month. Thank you very much for Todd Kaflish, who signed up recently in the Christmas New Year break. Thank you very much, Todd, longtime supporter and former guest. Appreciate it. Or if you are a sports technology, sports marketing business and want to reach a sports business audience, you can become a silver or gold supporter and get your logo in all of the show notes at sportsgeekhq.com and in every Sports Geek news. But now, let's get into it. My chat with Craig Hutchison from Croc Media. Very happy to be here at the headquarters of Croc Media. Welcome to the podcast, Craig.
Hey, Sean, good to catch up again, mate. It's been far too long, which is my bad.
That's nice, all right.
To see you. Congratulations on your year.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Well, first of all, just for people who might not know you, obviously they think that people in Australia would know your name. You got your start as a cadet journalist at the Herald Sun and as a sports journo. What drew you to a little sports?
Yeah, I've always wanted to be a sports journalist since I was a kid. So from the age of, my dad tells me, 3 or 4 years old, I was mimicking out and pretending to be a sports commentator and all those things a lot of kids, I guess, do. And then avid reader of the Sun newspaper as a kid and started journalism at the age of 12. So very fortunate to get an early start. And yep, maybe that was what cooked me in the end, because by about the age of 35, I was cooked from journalism. I'd run my race, but loved it. And obviously it's great grounding for other things you want to go and do in life.
So in your journalist career, you pretty much worked at every TV station, worked at multiple radio stations in this town, being a big footy town. When did you start? You said that you were cooked. When did you start looking at the business side of sports media?
Not really till I was about 30. I went overseas, kind of resigned all my jobs.
Yep.
In 2005 or 6, and went to the States to live, really without much of a plan. I'd had a little bit of a go at radio syndication by accident before then and was curious about it.
Yep.
But went away and didn't really have a plan other than I wanted to get out of Australia, and I was kind of a bit broken by the town and bit run down and worn out and was at a real crossroads.
Yeah.
And so then try to figure out what to do next and never really had a vision to be in business until then, at the age of 30, and then started. And the first couple of things we did didn't work. You know, PR was, I think, our first vertical and TV distribution our second. And
yep.
Neither of them worked. Ironically, we're kind of getting back into them some 13 years on, but at the time they weren't winners and we weren't well planned either. But the third thing we got to do was radio distribution and syndication, which we found a little niche in and we kept going and got a little bit lucky and worked hard and got through. Touch wood, got through. You never know, do you?
Yep. It's always a work in progress. So that started with you doing shows and effectively renting airtime and was that following a little bit of what you saw in the US?
Yeah, I think obviously the US inspires you on a lot of different things. There's a business there called Westwood One, which is, I guess, a little similar to us.
Yeah, Norm Pattitz, lucky enough to meet him at a podcast conference many years ago.
That's an incredible business. That's got the benefit of scale.
Yep.
It's a bit more traditional in the way it sells than us, but it's and there's a business in America in the UK called TalkSport, which has got some similarities to us. I think they're a touch smaller than us in revenue, but very similar in distribution and manner. And, yeah, so not that either of them I'd done the work on, but I was aware of the syndication model,
yep.
but green as grass about it. When I went to America the first time, I rang a bunch of radio shows and stations around the country and asked them if I could do American reports, and I was thinking that everyone would be interested, and no one was interested.
Yep.
And then I was able to talk a few into doing it in exchange for some basic, sponsor credits. And so it was a pretty simple beginning.
Yep.
A mate of mine posted that called Mark Howard, who now has the Howie Games.
Yep, one of the most popular podcasts here in Australia.
Which is a phenomenal podcast. He wanted to go to the World Cup in Germany. What's that, about 2007 or 8?
Yep.
And he asked me if I could replicate what I did in the States for him there. And so I took that on as a challenge and built a bunch of radio distribution for him and built this blog called HowieOnTour.com. And on the eve of the tour, he pulled out.
Okay.
And for his own reasons. And so I had to find another Howie to go because I'd built the blog. And
yep.
So I found Anthony Howard to go instead of Mark and played on. So, yeah, we've made a couple of early day mistakes, but then got a feel for a little bit for what the stations did and didn't want. And clearly the economic model was a bit back to front. The stations weren't going to be investing in talent. They were open to being paid for their airtime, and generally speaking for airtime, that it was a bit more in their minds off-Broadway. So
yep.
That's sort of how it began.
And then sort of grew from there to diving more and more into the footy, building out that regional network and starting to, I guess, really get some strength in the regional part of Australia?
Yeah, look, it's been more well told in recent times, regional Australia is 37% of the population. It was largely overlooked. It was difficult to reach from an advertiser point of view. It was undervalued from an advertiser point of view and still absolutely is. The recent Boomtown campaign, which the stations themselves run, I thought was great. It's 10% of the 10% of the national ad spend and 37% of the population. Like, there's a disproportionate focus on regional Australia. It was clearly a bit of a gap. They're hardcore latched on sports fans and love sport. And generally speaking, in those towns, the local footy club, the local racing club, the local netball club defines the community. So we thought there was something there we could try and build and scale and be a one-stop shop if we could to help from a sports perspective and to work with the stations. And that was our original thinking. And, so we've done – hopefully we've been good advocates, if nothing else, that regional Australia is a great platform.
Yeah, I mean, everyone, when they look at Australia outside looking in, they do see the five major cities, and that's where – everyone concentrates on, but as you said, there's a lot of people outside the major major metropolitan areas. So it makes sense that regional makes a way to connect with the majority of Australia.
And when we grew back into the cities, and we're now in every city, we wanted to make sure we didn't do that at the expense of regional. So that was our later challenge, was to maintain our regionality without ignoring the mass eyeballs that lived in cap cities, listeners, I should say, rather than eyeballs. So yeah, that's been the challenge. I think the radio industry is in great nick in Australia. It's growing still in a declining media market. It's got great distribution. It's got good owners. It's got the Australia's traffic problems that help it, I assume, to some small degree.
Yep.
And it's a healthy industry, and we've been lucky enough to that's probably our biggest product, but we're also in 15 different verticals here now, and that's one of them.
And that sort of led to 2016 getting that AFL rights deal. And for those who don't know, you effectively acquired all the rights, regional and metro. How did the genesis of that deal come about and be built out to be bigger? Because you obviously are in the regional space. How did you go from, like, that's a, you know, a big bet in 2016?
Yeah, it was probably, it was the defining point for us, because it could have gone as south the other way if it had failed or if we had done nothing. It was a preventative measure as much as anything for us. So we were the smallest partner. We had a little patch of land, regional Australia. And once that little patch of land, we didn't own any stations, and we had a variation of regional rights. We were probably the AFL's smallest check, I'd assume.
Yep.
Don't know. And we were aware of much bigger interest from others in a bigger play. So we were worried that we might be lost in the wash. And so you can sometimes got to turn defence into attack, and we thought that the best way to do it was to try and be part of a much bigger deal and to partner with someone on it. And when we were unable to find a partner on it, on the bigger deal, we went alone. Really just to try and protect ourselves, because we knew the alternative, which, so the underbidder, which wasn't publicly or widely known at the time, would have meant mass change in the industry, mass change in platforms, costs. It was, you know, a daunting alternative for us if they weren't partnered with. And so we went alone. And in the end, it was quite a complicated deal, because it was a series of intertwined partnerships with distribution.
Yep.
But we were able to grow our business, and we had to really pony up and then build our business quickly on the back of it to keep up with the escalating rights fees. But it was, in our world, it was our kind of blockbuster move.
And at that time, did it feel like you were on the edge of the cliff going, well, I've got to jump here, or someone's going to push us off?
Yeah, there was no middle ground. So we had to make it work quickly. And so we knew we had to grow our business quickly, and we hadn't been growing that quickly. We were just 2 or 3 years. We were about, you know, small growth or same like for like year on year. So
yep.
There was no room to fail. And sometimes in life, when you put yourself on the line like that, you've got no choice but to find a way to make it work. And we're very lucky and fortunate that we're able to do that and grew ourselves into more of a national cap city business.
And do you think that also, like that pressure to make that deal work enabled and forced the other steps that came after that?
Yeah, no question. Because then you've got a different business, whether you like it or not. You've got a whole different cost base, a whole different bunch of obligations, and you've got no... It's not like we could roll them out every 3 to 6 months, all the things we did. We had to do them all at the one time because yep. We were chips in. So that creates a lot of challenge, but it was also really exciting and still remains exciting. It's great fun.
And that, I mean, the parts are, again, for the people who don't know, that led to the merger with Pacific Star, which is acquisition and bringing in the SEN brands into the network. How has that piece, I guess, gone, and the continued expansion on the audio side?
Yeah, so we always loved the SEN business. We were a supplier for 10 years, and for most of that 10 years had a terrific relationship. It got a little bit tested towards the end on the back of the rights deal and the administration at the time, which I think is pretty well tabled. One of their shareholders was a fund called Viburnum, based in Perth, led by a wonderful businessman called Craig Coleman, and he owned 20% of the old Pacific Star network, and they were at a point of Viburnum of deciding what they did, divest, dial up, or get out.
Yep.
Divest or dial up. And so he came and saw us, and we had a chat about whether we might want to partner on it if they did something, and we were absolutely interested because it's right at our wheelhouse. And yeah, then along came the merger. So we were able to merge the two businesses with the support of both groups of shareholders in the end. And Pacific Star Network rolled into Pacific Star Network, and we became a public company.
Yep.
And that's been a whole different journey. And having an owned and supplied environment is quite challenging every day, because you've got to think.
Yeah, because you've gone from being a partner to all these people, and then having your own platform and serving all parties.
Yeah, and you've got to think through how to build your owned platform, but not at the expense of your supplied business, and to be hugely respectful to those businesses that you do supply. So that's been a challenge, but a great one. And I think we've been pretty true to that. Like we value the supplied world just as much as the owned environment. It's not like we're pushing SEN at the expense of any other station. In fact, you know, Sports Day here in Victoria outrates comfortably our 6 p.m. show on SEN, and that's great. the sports day we supply to 3RW, and we write its ratings probably harder than we do our own. Ultimately, the consumer will choose. We're in the era of choice, as you know very well. And if nothing else, we just want to provide mass choice to people. That's why we've added different channels and different sports, and we want to be able to give a sports fan what they want, when they want it, how they want it, rather than sell our product to them. Let them choose what they want and hopefully be part of that consumer journey.
Well, that's the thing. You know, 10 years ago, SEM was linear and you flick the dial and it's on. And now all of these content producers, including SEM, are on demand, anytime. You know, I can talk to my Alexa and have Jared start talking back to me with results and that kind of thing. How is that? You know, you're obviously a massive lover of radio, and that has the audio landscape changed?
It's changed enormously in our minds, and we're still dabbling with it like everybody. But we want a listener to be able to hear us where they want, how they want. We also want to be choice. So if you look at our SEM app, for instance, now, which we've redone, it's 12 months old. The new app, it's. Version up to version 4.0, I think now.
Yep,
it's got 203,000 downloads. The average person is listening to 308 minutes a week through it. 9 sessions at 29 minutes each, approximately. It's fueling our podcast business, which we've got. I think we've got 14 of the top 100, 2 of the top 5 in the country at the moment. And we've got multiple sports running through. We're doing tile takeovers on sports. The last 2 weeks alone, you could hear Test cricket, Big Bash, Australian Open golf, Melbourne Aces radio. All sorts of basketball, NBA and domestic basketball, NFL this morning as a tile takeover when I got up this morning on our SEN Plus station. The Adelaide 36ers, Melbourne United, incessant choice, and often 3 or 4 or 5 sports at the same time, and you can flick through on the tiles to the different stations. That's a little bit unheard of in this country from a sports perspective, and we're just trying to let the audience decide what they like and watching the results and testing it. It's not about holding the listener hardcore onto the radio station anymore. It's about letting them be part of the SEN environment wherever they so choose to be. We're serving 1 to 1.5 million videos a month. And we've got video coming out of Melbourne and Adelaide every morning. So we're trying to be as much consumer-led as we can and listener-led as we can and see what happens.
And so how much is, you talk about the AFL deal and it was duplicated with FFA and cricket and those kind of things too, because now you've got a platform, you've got to keep buying rights and you need content. You know, the appetite for content is voracious both from the audience, but as a platform you need it. How much is it now, like you said before, more niche for our American listeners, getting a lot of those smaller audiences and aggregating them up, whether it is Melbourne Aces or Lawn Bowls or those kind of things that don't have platforms and you're giving them that platform, and advertisers start getting into those smaller audiences but super passionate, they love that sport or that team. How is that different from the big, broad, AFL mainstream appeal?
Well, I think it's we're at a really interesting point of sports rights in Australia. Like there's in the television world, there's been a gap, significant gap, open up between what would be perceived to be the tier one sports. I don't choose to call them that because everything's tier one in our world.
Yep.
But the perception is that there's tier one sports, and if you want to run that exercise, AFL, NRL, cricket, and the Australian Open tennis as opposed to tennis.
Yep.
Really the tier one. A-League has been a tier one from a check point of view, and I think as its challenges to re-attract that check. So it's probably the swinging voter in the tier one.
Yep.
And then there's a gap to the others who have probably been punished a little bit for the amount of money going in by the networks to the top sports. So those sports haven't been able to enjoy the broadcast support from a television perspective that they previously had, which puts pressure on their sponsorships and their advertising and their cost base.
Yep.
So clearly we've tried to work to help as many sports as we can. And radio's, I guess, a little bit the same. I think radio's a great product in so many sports that haven't probably had as much exposure as they would like. Like the Melbourne Aces is a great example. It's, in many people's eyes, a niche sport in Melbourne, but it's a great radio product.
Yep.
Because it's theatrical and it's...
It's got the timing and pace to be able to tell a story.
Yeah, it's got great cadence.
Yep.
I think the tennis is really a great radio product because it's dramatic and this outcome, and there's someone wins, someone loses, someone goes home at the end of every game. Like this, there's lots to like about the tennis, and we've gone hard into that. In the lawn bowl space, we've gone hard into television because there's clearly nearly 700,000 participants in Australia. There's a big Facebook community in lawn bowls. Like, there's a lot of opportunities in some of these sports which have perhaps been a little bit overlooked. And hopefully, if you can, to your point, aggregate a little bit of it or to share services across some of it, it helps everyone's business models. So that's what we've probably tried to focus on.
But it's also like one of the things when people talk to me or ask me about your business, like one of the strengths of your business is the sales component of your business, in that you've got all these assets, but you've really got a great sales team and a lot of great partners to be able to say, here's all different media options and opportunities that you can reach these audiences. I think that's one of the strengths of your business. I think it's what you've also brought to SEN. Like, that's where a lot of those niche sports are having trouble in getting that sale or getting to those brand managers and those kind of things. So I think that's one of the things that, you know, Croc Media does really well.
Yeah, thank you, but it doesn't always feel like we're like everyone. We've got a brilliant team. Our sales, our senior leaders in our sales team are fantastic. We've got some great guys and girls who run those areas of the business and do a fantastic job around the country. But it's like everyone. It's not easy out there. You've got to be nimble. You've got to be creative. You've got to be prepared to change. You're going to win some and lose some. I think, you know, it's the centre of our whole business. It has to be.
Yep.
And it's a thing you're always working on. You're always working on it to some degree. I mean, here this morning working on it.
And it is also, you know, we've seen a couple of large media groups here in Australia launch the Advertise or Die campaign, which is to, you know, to tap the CEOs of Australia on the shoulder and say, there's all these great platforms, media platforms that are still available, still a way to reach those audiences. They're partly doing it because it is a tough ad market out there. But also they're trying to get some of the money back that's going to Mr. Zuckerberg and Mr. Google because so much of the ad money is going to that space.
Out of the country. Yeah, no question. I think sport's got a natural – this will sound like me selling our product, but let me just sell sport for a moment for you.
Yep.
Sport's a great place for an advertiser to apply their craft because it's real time. People watch it, listen to it, or consume it as it's happening. It's not affected by time shift like everything else is. I mean, news is probably the only other thing that's not affected by time shift other than sport.
Yep.
And you can argue that Twitter's changed news. If you're running a 3 or 4 day sale on a weekend, you can talk to a sports consumer in real time in sport. You know, it's very hard to do that in traditional television now because people are watching Netflix or they're taping it and watching it in 10 days from now when they choose to.
Yep.
And you're also talking to people when they're at their most engaged. They're captive and they're riding the bumps of the game. I think sport has a halo that affects in a positive way the advertising market. You get that association that comes with it. You get talent advocacy. Sport does talent better than anybody, probably in this country, the most well-known, you know, probably people in the country who've got a sport background. So I think it's a good place for the advertiser. And it also happens at different times in stages of the week. So, yeah, we think it's a good place to be. That's our fairway. We're going to try and stay on our fairway.
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, and then there's also the counter to the dark clouds that are hanging over the sports rights to go, oh, is this money still going to be here? If you're in the TV chair, you're like, what does drive people to my TV? You know, because you're right, no one's flicking on to watch a drama, you know, maybe some reality show because there might be some social chatter, but the only thing that makes you tune in to watch it is live sport. So...
Yeah, I think more and more, like you see the great television businesses are adapting their model to be able to let the consumer choose when they watch things and to try and go with them on that. The linear watch-out television station really doesn't exist anymore. I mean, a lot of young people struggle to know what television is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean the television network can't be part of their journey in different ways, given the power of their... So the distribution is just one part of the piece now. The beauty of sport is it is a reliable, bankable, people will turn it on when it's on thing to do. And that's what I love about it. That's what I think is great for the ad market. You can trust when people are going to consume it. And that's very hard to get in many other mediums at the moment. So that's why we're as invested in live sport, I guess, as we are. And I think for fans, it's great too because it's escapism. It's...
Well, Peter Sorkoff talked about like a church. Like, you know, where else do you go knowing potentially that you're going to be disappointed by the end result, but you're there for the live experience and you're consuming it, whether you're in the stadium or at home, you know, it's completely unscripted drama. it makes no sense when you step away and look at it and go, why did I invest so much of my emotional, you know, heart into these 2 hours or 45 minutes, whatever it is, and you don't get the result, but it's to be part of that tribe.
And I think in 2020, which we're heading into by the time this podcast probably drops, we all want to feel connected and part of a community, and sport does that better than anything. It really does. You look at the advent of social media and the work you've done in that over the last decade, it's a lot of that really centers on the feeling of being included or part of the conversation. Sport's always done that well. And I think sports media's always done that well. And then the way the two intersect is really interesting. So, yeah, it changes quickly. You can't afford to be too stubborn in your views. You've got to be able to adapt quickly, but it's a lot of fun.
So one of the things you've obviously been playing in the space of reporting of sport and broadcasting of sport, and in the last 2 years you now effectively jumped the fence and into team ownership and buying a stake of Melbourne United. What led you to that? Are you trying to beat Gary Vaynerchuk to own a piece of an NFL team down the track, or what led you to the world of sports ownership and Melbourne United in particular?
I do love Gary V. I follow him closely, like you do. I think you put me onto him originally, by the way. So thank you for that. I think for us, basketball is the fastest growing sport in this country in our view, and it's come off a lower base because of the problems it had 5 years ago. It's got a great owner in Larry Kesselman. It's got all the things you look for in content in 2019. It's fast, it's family friendly, it's kids taking their parents to the games, it's over in 2 hours, it's snackable highlights. It's got a lot going for it. The NBA's grown so significantly that in areas like, you know, wagering, it's gone past AFL and NRL in Australia. The NBA is a massive part of the next generation of Australians already, and Australia's probably the second, third or fourth best league in the world, depending on who you ask.
Yep.
And we've got a great relationship with the NBA. So there's a lot of things from a sport point of view I liked. Also liked the fact that our customers were asking us what we were going to do in the sport.
Yep.
We had probably four clients who said, are you guys in basketball? And if so, where? And how can we be involved with you? So that was a really interesting seed of an idea. We inherited the radio rights for Melbourne in the merger.
Yep.
And everyone seemed pretty happy with how that had gone, looked at that interestingly. And then we were open to something different because we got a lot of radio rights. So, you know, was it just going to be a radio product for us? Probably not. The more we looked at television and production services and other areas, the idea of owning a team became an embryonic thought. We had a couple of startups who were looking at licenses who came and saw us, shared their thoughts, and asked if we'd partner because they thought a media partner was a good fit, and that was reaffirmation for us. But we weren't really suited to a startup. And then we got wind that Melbourne United, the premiers at that stage, were Larry was looking to divest down with a bunch of smaller owners because in equity size, not in stature, because of his knee with the league. So that got interesting. We would have been a pretty average minority owner, I think, because we like to try and influence what we get involved in, and we've got too much to say. So it only made sense for us if we could get a meaningful stake. And then Larry was kind enough to sell down to 25 and allow us to buy in at 25. And that began the journey last year. And a lot of learnings. Then this year we've taken the commercial rights of the team in-house here. So we now sell all the sponsorships here.
Okay.
And that revenue is embedded in our business and the costs. And I've taken on the chairmanship in the last 6 months, and so that's sort of phase two, and then let's see where else it goes, but it's been a lot of fun.
I mean, you're a very well connected man, so it's not like you've now joining in conversations you might not have had, but is it different being I guess on the owner side? Is there different conversations that are happening that you might have missed previously?
Yeah, I think I'm out of my comfort zone, that's for sure. I mean, I'm not a natural chairman of a board because I'm a bit of a doer rather than a general? Yeah. I don't think I'm the natural chairman. So that's been a challenge for me to try and work out when to get involved and when to get out of the way.
Yep.
It's still a challenge. And then there's lots about the business you don't yet know because you haven't done it before, like, you know, direct-to-consumer ticketing and, you know, marketing to direct-to-consumers and areas of the, you know, the academies and the community programs, and they're all a bit new to me. So working to understand that as best as I need to. And ultimately, what I am really clear on is that we need a healthy league.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to be as a representative of our ownership group, because it's not me, it's our business.
Yeah.
But in the public markets, albeit, that own this stake in the team. So I'm trying to be an advocate for all nine teams, trying to help all nine teams grow. I think it's a better strategy for us to help, you know, compete hard on the court like we did on Saturday against Perth, and it was great to have a win.
Yep.
But as soon as the game's over, get back to how we make the nine teams in the league better, because ultimately we'll get towed along in that.
And that's the difference between, you know, standard business and effectively being part of a team or a league, because they, you know, very much the rising tides lift all boats in that scenario. Yep. And so you've got to balance that to be helping teams lift up and meet the standard or raise the bar, is, I think, you know, what Larry has done in the NBL, and Jeremy's done a great job in that aspect to bring everyone up. But it is getting everybody, like, running in the same direction. It's a very different way of running business.
Yeah, it is. But it seems pretty simple to me, in that we need no point having four or five strong teams and four or five struggling teams. It'll affect all of us big time. We need to get the competition as even as it can be, as competitive on its day. The team's not too not too much disparity in wages, and in, you know, I don't think it serves anyone any good to have, for us to be winning, or anyone to be winning by 10, 15 points every week, and having teams go back to small markets who are struggling. So that's the real challenge, against the fact that we want to build our team and be the best we can be as well. So we want to be all things to all people, and that's the challenge of business, is to keep the momentum growing of the sport. We're really comfortable with our investment, I can tell you that much. We're really, really pleased where it sits, and, you know, we're hopeful it can keep growing.
And you've had you've built up some rivalry from an owner point of view with yourself and Paul Smith from the Kings, and part theatre, but part of that exercise of growing the league.
Yeah, so Paul's an interesting character. He's a chips in owner in Sydney. He's got basically the whole team, albeit got future obligations for a small piece of it for Andrew Bogut down the track. And he's been a successful businessman himself. He's also a loudmouth and a obnoxious character to some.
Yep.
For me, I think he's great for the league, because he's got a lot to say and he's going to be a bit different. He's going to overstep the mark at times, and he'll say the same of me. So, but it's really important to us for Sydney to be healthy in this competition. They weren't always healthy, and he's been great for that team, whichever way you look at it. So, yeah, I think he's probably comes from the same school as me, which is, let's not have private conversations that stir each other up. If we're going to have something to say, we'll do it publicly.
Yep.
And I think, you know, we've been baiting each other a little bit to this point of the season. And, you know, it's been, hopefully it's adds a bit of excitement and drama to the small piece of the rivalry, which is very real rivalry between the two teams. Like, we, you know, Saturday when they're playing in Brisbane and they're down, I'd be lying myself, not having a look at my phone, monitoring the scores and hoping for a Brisbane win. And he would have been exactly the same against us.
Yeah.
It's a good natured rivalry. I think he's great for the sport, and we'll disagree on some things along the way, but yeah.
I mean, yeah, it is very much Don King or P.T. Barnum part of it, because you need those people out there causing, you know, getting headlines and starting Twitter wars and those kind of things, because it just builds more eyeballs and drives people in, cheeks on the seats, get people to the games, which is the main priority.
Yeah, basketball is an entertainment product where there happens to be a basketball game in the middle of it. It's about fun. It should be fun, theatrical. It should feel like a great time with your family. And that's what we want to try and achieve. And anything that we can add to the entertainment, why wouldn't we?
And so, like I said, this podcast, we're recording this before 2020, but how are you feeling going into 2020 on all fronts? Like, looking at the sports media space and basketball going into 2020, how are you feeling looking at the new decade?
Yeah, well, we've got a big job in our hands. Like, sport changes all the time. We've got shifting marketplace. We've got a lot of work to do here. And I'm really excited about what our radio business can look like next year. I'm excited by the growth in our Rainmaker television business, which is production service. It's now got a delivery technical delivery business inside that.
Yep.
That helps us deliver product more simply and easily and cost effectively to leagues, clubs and networks. Our ballpark business is growing really quickly, and we're looking forward to seeing where that goes. We've got a lot going on here. So, yeah, we'll start again. I feel like I'm in startup mode from the 1st of January 2020, and that's good for the soul when you can find that mode, and we'll go again.
Well, and that's the thing with the landscape changing so often, like back to when you made that first AFL radio deal, like, you're still on the edge of the cliff. You've still got to keep pushing, don't you?
Yeah, I think we're a challenger business. We try not to be disruptive, but we're probably perceived as a disruptor. I would like to think of ourselves as an enhancer of the areas we get involved with and try and create value for everyone we work with. And that's the challenge. So, yeah, we've got to keep being ahead of the curve and innovative and try things. I'm prepared to fail at a few things along the way. It's a little bit harder in a public company. There's not as much wriggle room to fail as when you're in a private business.
Yep.
And I only want to add worth to our P&W shareholders, which is how we trade on the stock market and the P&W.
Yep.
If anyone wants to invest in us along the way, they'd be most welcome to join us on the journey. So that's the challenge ahead, and we'll do everything we can.
So thank you very much. I want to finish with the Sports Geek closing five.
Yep.
Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I assume it was VFL Park, because that's where my dad, it was as far as he'd drive from Warragul.
Okay.
And we went there for a lot of, whenever Geelong played there, two or three games a year there. So I don't know the exact game, but maybe Richmond. But I'll call it Geelong v someone like Richmond at VFL Park.
VFL Park out at Waverley?
Yep.
Okay. And you would have been to a fair few sports events. You've been to a couple of Super Bowls and obviously had them covered on SEN. Is there a favourite food memory at a sports event, or do you have a go-to food when you're at a sports event?
Well, this won't surprise anyone by the look of me, but my favourite food anyways is a pie.
Yep.
Yeah, and party pies in particular.
Party pies, just at half time. Are you worried about the shortening of half time that you won't be able to get to enough of the party pies?
I think it'll be good for my waistline, the shortening of half time. I think it's actually going to be one of the great things for big guys to prohibit our ability to get to the food or the bar.
What's the first app you open in the morning?
The SEN app, as you would assume, because yep. we're so proud of it and really invested in it, and encourage anyone to download it if you haven't, because you'll get sport all day long in every form you want.
And is there something or someone that you suggest the podcast listeners should either follow or read or check out that you've been checking out yourself?
Well, I'm a bit of a binge TV watcher on big stuff. I don't watch a lot of TV, but I've watched, like everyone else, The Morning Wars, which I loved.
Yep.
Billions and Succession. They're the three things that I've probably invested TV time into in the last couple of years. I love any media books. So the last one I read was To Catch and Kill by Ronan Keating about the NBC Wars, which is yep. a fantastic media book about the battle between journalism and ownership.
Yep.
And that resonated with me.
Which is completely in your wheelhouse.
Resonated with me on both fronts. And from a podcast point of view, I listen to a bit of wrestling podcast as escapism.
Yep.
I like Talk is Jericho, Chris okay. Jericho.
His interview podcast series.
Yep. And I also like I'm interested to see where the new Steve Austin Broken Skull Sessions goes via the WWE Network. So there are just a couple of things to get my mind off work for an hour.
But that, I mean, and then, talk about a fascinating business. The WWE as a sports entertainment business is fascinating. And, you know, them having another crack at
the XFL
is going to be it's going to be interesting to see how it goes.
No doubt. So, yeah, that I love Vince, as you know, and idolise that business from a media point of view. It's got its challenges. It's not cool in 2019. The internet trolls have turned against it, and you know, young startup AEWs are more, I guess, internet friendly, and you would read the themes of that yep. audience better. I sense that the internet community has, and probably not even the right term for them these days,
yep.
has gone a bit the same way as global politics has gone. There's a lot of swim against the stream going on, which is why your Trumps and your Boris's are landing in jobs.
Yep.
And I think things that were historically cool are tarnished by having been cool in the past. WWE's right at this interesting spot, isn't it, where the online world doesn't just forever out to bash it. And I sense we've gone past the tipping point of that. What do you think?
But but they were so early on things like OTT and, you know, to grab the BAM network and roll that out. And everyone said, no, you know, the model is pay-per-view, everyone pays this. And then everyone figured out, $9.95, why wouldn't we do it? So. Yeah. I think they've been, quick to build out different models. You know, they were doing like the universe before Marvel was doing the universe.
Yeah.
Of, you know, here's all of our storylines. They all weave together. They were early on reality. So I think, you know, I trust that Vince and the team there are going to keep they're one of the most nimble billion-dollar businesses in the world, right? They just keep, you know, changing up, going into new markets, going in with new offers, starting up new brands. It's almost like, you know, the beer companies are now just buying up all the craft beers, and people are thinking they're drinking craft beers, but they're owned by, you know, three of the global breweries. They're just creating these new brands that new fans are going, oh, look at me, I'm cool, I'm following this new brand, not realizing that Vince is driving it and that kind of thing. So I think that that's where I think, you know, they're very good at creating these new brands, and that I'm interested to see what they do with the XFL. How, you know, if they go, you know, full heel effectively on the sport, or whether they develop it as a sport in its own right, and how much of the theatre entertainment they bring, and how much, you know, it's actually a game.
It's one of the most fascinating sports things for me in 2020, how they handle that, because they probably overplayed their hand on the wrestlingism, for lack of a better word, last time, didn't they? I think they'll find a better balance. They're much better funded too. They're in for the long haul. And I think it'll be great to watch the XFL. I can't wait to see it start after in February.
And because we have seen all of these new sports invented since they first did it. Like, first time they did it, it was like, cool, we'll just put wrestling and football together. But they've seen cricket reinvent itself a couple of times in different formats. Everyone's trying to create this small snackable format and different ways to create media content. Yeah. And they've just gone and done it in a gap. Like, there's no one there. There's eyeballs required. You know, people will watch football in that gap. It's going to be interesting to see, like, how it develops.
Yeah, I think they've got the ability to reimagine the sport because they haven't got history against them, right? They can pretend what would happen if the NFL was started today. They're not inhibited by 100 years of laws and traditions. So I think it'll be faster moving, quicker, less breaks. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Football won't be quite as good. They can't ever win that, right? A leader was going to play in the higher competition, so they can win the consumption battle if they're smart.
And it's good to see. There'll be an Australian connection with the guys at Champion Data doing a bunch of the stats and the analytics and integrating into broadcast and all that kind of stuff to give a new feel to that game.
That's really cool for them. So I wish the Champion Data guys luck with that. They're good people.
And the last one, what social media platform is your MVP?
Social media MVP?
Yep.
Well, I don't want to sound too self-serving, but I can consume so much of our own content now, and I'm forever looking at other people's just to see how ours go. I love what Gary Vee does.
Yep.
And again, you put me on him. I'm sure it was you several years ago.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Is there a platform that you consume that's your... the way that you consume all of the different media that is you know, your go-to?
No, I'm a surfer.
Yep.
So I'm not someone that lets someone else aggregate my consumption. I'm really interested in what Twitch is doing. I think they're in a really interesting phase of their growth.
Yep.
By my own admission, I'm not an expert on their business model or their distribution model, but I really...
We could send people to the sounding board where yourself and Damo... which we're explaining what Twitch was.
But I think it's... you know, what they're doing is really interesting. I think, you know, Amazon are obviously doing some really cool things.
Well, it is the like being in the gaming esports space, it is the different, it's a more engaged audience. You know, it's that lean in. Everyone talks about, oh, I'll be lying back on the couch, I'll have the phone, and that'll actually be the first screen, and I'll be watching the sport on the second screen on the TV. Like, that's flipped in the last in the last 5 years. Whereas Twitch, because it's got this conversation element and that social element, and that, hey, I'm chatting with people, which we've had. You know, we've had on other platforms. You know, we've watched Ashton Agar over in the Ashes nearly, you know, get a big score, and at 1 o'clock and everyone's talking to one another on platforms, whereas Twitch offers that integrated. It's going to be interesting to see how they start entering and talking to advertisers. And I think advertisers and rights holders are going to be the ones that drive the change, because at the moment they're not as sophisticated enough to tell, you know, a McDonald's, oh, this is who's watching. Here's how long they're watching for, you know, because they haven't built out an ad platform like Facebook and Google. So, but they've got a really engaged audience. So I think some of the stuff that the NBL is doing is really exciting in putting both the product on Twitch to be a new audience, but then this co-streaming idea, which allows a streamer to commentate the game and bring their audience, because they've got their own audience in their own right.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, so we'll see things like, you know, Ninja, which he has done, commentate an NFL game, and Ninja's audience will be watching NFL for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, so that's where, you know, the media rights and everything changes so quickly.
And that's the beauty of the NFL, is it can actually, by accident, design or otherwise, kind of cut out the middleman being the broadcast partner and just talk directly to a consumer, and often who've got their own audiences to bring to it. So I'm fascinated. We've been part of the trial. We called Melbourne United. We were the first ones to call our own game on Twitch.
Yep.
We want to see more of our fans start to do that. So it'll be an interesting evolution in the next couple of years. I'm looking forward to it.
And so where can people follow you, follow all things Croc Media and Twitch? Where should they be going?
At Craig Hutchie on Twitter is a pretty good place to start. I would think my email address is the only widely made available email address in the, like, it's on all my social footprints. Yep. I encourage people to get in touch directly, craig@crocmedia.com.
Reach out to yourself in LinkedIn. You're active in reporting what the Croc Media and SEN are doing on LinkedIn and becoming more active in that space.
100%. So you can find me there or wherever you like. And thanks for your time. Good luck for your business next year. Well done on your foray into esports. It's brave and smart, and wish you luck with it. And thanks for all your support over the journey.
No worries, mate. Cheers.
New workshops on audience, content, distribution, valuation, and pitch following SportsGeek's Digital to Dollars process. Go to digitaltodollars.com.
Thanks again to Hutchie, as he is known, an absolute media giant here in Australia, doing some terrific things in the radio and TV space. If you're not following him on Twitter, you should. Craig Hutchie, as he said. Connect with him, Craig Hutchison, on LinkedIn. The links will be in the show notes, which will be sportsgeekhq.com/263. And if you are on LinkedIn and we haven't connected, my apologies. If I haven't connected with you as a podcast guest, podcast listener, that's my bad. You can connect with me, Sean Cullinan. Send me an invite. Please tell me that you listen to the podcast. I'm very likely to accept anyway, but if you tell me you listen to the podcast, I'll actually reply and say thank you as well. If you are a connection on LinkedIn, you might have seen a post I did at the start of the year. As Sports Geek is now entering its 11th year, I've been able to reflect on the people and teams I've been fortunate enough to work with across digital marketing technology in the world of sports, and terribly grateful for that. And it's something that I'm thankful for every day. And in planning for 2020, I made a list of people that I'd like to work with. That's the beauty of running your own business. You can get to pick and choose who you would like to work with. Some of the people I've worked with before and I want to work with again. Some of the people I'm lucky enough to interview on the podcast that I would like to work with, and some of the people just that I'm going to be reaching out to that I've just met either at a conference or even just via the internet, via social media, but I've admired potentially from afar. 11 years into Sports Geek, I'm definitely playing the long game. One of the goals that I released, or I guess made public in Dallas at SEAT in 2018, was to make digital the number one source of revenue for sports by 2030. I believe in that now more than ever, and I'm completely doubling down on that. If that's something you want to sign up for and support, I'd love your support. Love you to reach out and say it's something that you're also chasing. The people who ask me why and why 2030 and why it's important, I mean, obviously at the moment, TV, ticketing, sponsorship are well in front of what digital provides. But I also remember what it was like in 2010. Very close to zero was being recorded as a revenue from digital. So over the past 10 years, we've seen sports teams, leagues, athletes grow revenue from digital assets and campaigns. I'm really proud that I've been able to help Sports Geek clients do that, and I'm also glad that people have been inspired and taken the case studies and the examples from guests of the podcast to be able to do that. So really want to keep driving that, and my mission and my theme for this year is executing big. I was talking to a friend of mine that helped inspire this, talking about how a lot of sports are doing a lot of little things and little projects and trying to move the needle with a little project here, a little project there, a pilot here, and it's not moving the needle because it's not big enough. And so it's about, for me, it's about having bigger dreams, but in tackling those bigger projects, tackling those bigger problems, because, I think there is a good, good amount of research that shows the amount of effort to move something that's big is about the same amount of effort to move something that's little. So it's swing for the fences, if I use the baseball parlance. So executing big is my theme. So one, if you're on the list that I've written down, scribbled out and followed up, you'll be getting an email or a LinkedIn message or a reach out from me to say, hey, how are you doing? Let's figure out how we can do some really cool stuff. And if you're not on my list and you want to be on the list and you want to work with me, please reach out. If I'm on your list, please reach out. Sean@sportsgeekhq.com. Like I said, I want to work with cool people doing cool things that want to execute big. How can you make a big impact on what you're doing with your business from a digital revenue point of view? Because the opportunity is now. A lot of the barriers that were in place 10 years ago of the technology wasn't there, the cost of technology was too much. Like, all of those barriers have just melted away. And so, you know, all the tools are there, all the platforms are there, all the passion is still there, all the fans are still there. It does come down to executing. And if you're going to execute, you can execute on something small and be busy for 52 weeks of the year, or you can execute on something big. So let's do that. Let's execute big. And even if I'm not part of this plan and I'm not working with you, please let me know of what big things you're executing. I'd love to hear them. I'd love to talk to you about them on the podcast. So, yeah, reach out. You know, and I think it's a really good a good theme, considering Craig being on the podcast, because he has done a great job of executing big and building Croc Media up to the media business that it is today, now encompassing SEN and also getting into team ownership. So yeah, if you're executing a big idea, please reach out. For a wrap up, Sports Geek Q&A will be coming back, but what I need and what I need to fill the questions. I need more questions. So we've had 9 episodes so far. I will answer 3 questions each episode, try to keep it short and snappy, try not to get too long-winded. So if you've got a question, go to sportsgeekhq.com/questions to have your question featured. And it can be any particular topic that you want me to answer. I will do my best to answer. Whether I know the answer or not, I will answer in my own way and give my take on it at the very least. Probably more opinion than fact. You can't be wrong. Everyone's got an opinion. You can't be wrong in that sense. So yeah, send in your questions, sportsgeekhq.com/questions if you want to fill out a form, if that's easier. But you can always send me a tweet, send me a message, send me a LinkedIn message, or anything along those lines, and I'll bank some of those questions to have more episodes of Sports Geek Q&A out from January 24, coming out every Friday. So there'll be 2 episodes coming out every week, the regular podcasts, interview podcasts like the one you've listened to today, and Q&A episodes on Friday. As always, love your feedback. I would love your feedback and love your reviews. If you've left a review recently, thank you very much. You can leave a review on the Apple Podcast Store by going to sportsgeekhq.com/Apple Podcasts. Until next week, don't forget, you can sign up to support our sports business content efforts at sportsgeekhq.com/Patreon. But until next episode, my name is Sean Callinan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join Sports Geek Nation, access to exclusive Slack and Facebook groups with regular Q&A sessions with Sean Callinan. Go to sportsgeeknation.com to join. Need help with your digital rate card? Not sure how to price your assets? Is there a disconnect between digital and commercial? That is where Sean works best, in digital divorce counselor mode. Book a time for a call with Sean to discuss the Sports Geek process. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.